morning, everyone. I'm Taryn Dixon. I'm a student at the University of Manitoba, and I'm going to bring you some news from Canada. But no cold weather, don't worry. As you may or may not know, Canada is the world's single largest producer of canola. And in 2008, over 50,000 prairie farmers produced a record amount of 12.6 million tons of canola. So since we can't consume all this canola ourselves, we end up exporting over 75% of the canola and canola products to places like the States, Japan, Mexico, and even China. So, do I have a pointer? Okay. As you notice in this graph, it's from 2000 to 2010, and it's the total Canadian canola oil exports, and it's on an incline, so it's a thing we have to continue to keep on the increase, so it works out well for us. And to keep all these customers happy, we need to keep providing them with top quality canola. And a new thing that a lot of customers are asking for is the quality of the canola even before the canola is harvested, so they know what they're paying for before they get it. And this presents an opportunity for a predictive model for canola, and that's where my project comes in. And the objective of my project is to synthesize a model which will successfully predict canola quality parameters based on the effects of environment, genotype, and genotype by environment interactions on the canola grown in Western Canada. So to decide what we are going to use to try and figure out what's causing this, the quality parameters to be at what they are, I looked at a review done by the Canadian Canola Council, where they said that variations in oil quality parameters had largely been due to meteorological conditions. So, therefore, we decided to make this model based mainly on weather data, as well as seeding date and variety. So this is kind of an idea of what my model is going to look like. Inputs are the seeding date, weather data, and the canola variety. And the output's going to be the quality parameters. So I was able to get weather data from the Environment Canada and Canadian Wheat Board weather stations across Western Canada. Sorry, I should introduce, as you may recognize, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, and North Dakota and Montana would just be down here. So the black dots there are all the weather stations spread out across the prairies, and all the yellow dots are the canola sample sites. And then I paired up the weather station with the sample site that was closest to it, and that became its weather data. Looking a little closer at the inputs, the weather data included daily high and low temperatures from which I could calculate the range and mean temperatures, as well as precipitation accumulated over a certain time frame. And model data, which was calculated out, stress days, which is the number of days that the crop experienced above a certain temperature. And to test, I used 34, 31, 20, oh sorry, these are all in Celsius, I should mention. 19, 22, 25, 28, 31, and 34 degrees Celsius. And stress degree days, a little bit different than stress days, are the degrees above that threshold. So for example, if I had 36, it would be 2 degrees above 34, and then that would be for one day. I also calculated out evapotranspiration, which is a reference value of the crop demand for water, and that's based on the temperature, daily temperatures, and the latitude, and the variety that I was using. Or sorry, not the variety. The type of crop that I was using, sorry, not the variety. So there are different crop coefficients used And mine was for canola, which changes throughout the growing season. And water stress index, which is basically a balance of the precipitation to the evapotranspiration. And the varieties that I looked at, they're 1841, 5020, 5030, 3465, 7145, and SP Banner. I picked those because they give a lot of diversity. They come from different companies, so they have different genetics. There's some open pollinated and some hybrid, and they have different longevity. So some have been around for a while and some were newer when I started this project. And the seeding date, which is pretty straightforward. The quality parameters that I'm looking to describe at the end of this are oil, protein, chlorophyll, glucosinolates, and from the fatty acid profile, oleic, linoleic, linolenic, and uric acid, as well as total saturated fatty acids and the iodine value. So studies like this have been done before. There's one done by Jim Don, which this figure comes from, and where they looked at the effect of weather on the oil content. But these were done per monthly values. So whether the crop was seeded at the beginning of May or the end of May, they were just looking at what that weather was at the time by the month. But my project's going to look at it by the physiological time. So if you look here at the bottom, there we go. There's the development of the canola plant. And instead of just saying what month it's at, I'm going to say at what stage it's at. So it's the same throughout everyone, and that makes every data set, every weather data set for each sample unique. And then there were five different divisions of the phenological stages that I used. Here, A, B, C, D, E. And then I also did cumulative ones, which started from seeding and went till the end of that section. So there's a whole bunch of independent variables, and I tested them against my quality parameters, which I came up with. And I used PLS, which is partially squares in SAS. It's kind of a newer program being used in agriculture. It's been used before, but not so much in agriculture. And it's advantageous because it works with... It can deal with unbalanced data, as a lot of mine is, since there were different numbers, since all the samples I got were from the harvest survey, and they were there's different numbers of each variety that came in. So using something that deals with unbalanced data was really good. It also can handle the multicollinearity. So since I have things tested up to see stage A, B, and C, and as well as things that test cumulative weather data to A and B, A, B, and C, it works that I can use something that deals with this and allows me to still test them all. And when it came out to counting out all my independent variables, I ended up having 242. So, and I don't have that many samples. I only had 225. So it's good that I could use PLS to... because it allows you to have more independent variables than actual samples and still give you good results. So here's the map that you saw earlier of Western Canada, and the lighter colored areas is where there's less lower oil content, and the darker red areas are where there's higher oil content. And the first time I ran it through, I used all the independent variables and came up with 31.17% of the variation being accounted for by, like I said, all the variables. But then I went through it again and tried to limit how many, because obviously when we're going to run a model, we don't want to have that many variables. And they're each contributing so little of amount that it's unnecessary. So I started to cut it down, and then... by picking the six most influential factors, I was able to account for 17% of the variation. But this is still a little bit of a work in progress. And I'm hoping that 17% will get closer up to 31 when I am able to separate out the data in different ways. And for protein, sorry, just as you notice, as I switch from the oil to the protein, it's kind of an inverse effect, the lighter areas and the darker areas, which is what we'd expect to see, seeing as protein and oil are usually an inverse relationship. You have more of one than less of the other because the plant can't do both. And using all my variables, I was able to explain 25% of the variation, and with only using the top six, only 3.6%. So again, I'm hoping to bring that back up closer to 25%. The equation that you see there is those six variables, as well as the intercept. And so SD being stress days and SDD being stress degree days, A, B, C, D, and E being the different stages. Here's total saturated fatty acids. Again, you can see a good range across, and the amount of variation I could explain went down a lot when I cut down how many variables I was looking at. I just wanted you to notice between the oleic and the linoleic, again, we see that inverse relationship, which kind of makes sense, and that follows as the temperature increases, we expect to have a lot higher saturated fatty acids, and then there's a move towards unsaturated fatty acids as we get to colder temperatures. And chlorophyll and glucosinolates, I couldn't explain very much of the variation. This is probably because there might be some effect due to the variety. So once I tease that out, I should be able to get that percentage up a little bit higher. So I'm looking forward to separating this data out by variety and then running some of these stats again, separating it out by OP versus hybrid, as well as herbicide tolerant versus conventional. And I know, I don't know how many soil scientists there are here today, but that's actually which department I'm from. And I didn't consider the soil types because it's hard to get some of that information, but if someone else could do that, it'd be great. I'd like to thank NSERC and the Canola Council of Canada for their funding, as well as my advisor, Dr. Paul Bullock, committee member Veronique Bartet, and Francis Zumoya for his help with stats. Thank you. Nope. I'll leave that one up. Yeah.
I was just wondering on your variables, I might have missed something, but you adjusted the time of those, like temperature early season or late season, and looked at some of that, or was it just the temperature over the whole season or a specific period?
Yeah, it was divided up because there's been some studies done looking at them over the whole season and per month, but oh, that's not where I wanted to go to. Yeah, so I actually came up with these A, B, C, D, E, different divisions based on using a P-day index, which is a physiological index, and it's kind of similar to growing degree day index, where you accumulate certain temperatures, and then once the sample had so many P days accumulated, then it was considered to have reached the end of that stage. So that's how I divide up the stages. And then I tested, all these against each stage as well as them cumulative. So I had some that were like A and B combined, all the weather data from seeding date till the end of that. Is that clear enough?
Combining B and C rather than using the alternative from A and C. Your variable C is indicated, temperature variable A from A to C, but maybe you can use like B from C, just in adding the variable.
Yeah, that's a good point. I could do that. I just didn't. So I'll keep that in mind. Thanks. Yep.
Last question. I think your work hinges on the hypothesis that you can explain this variation in oil content and whatever you look at by weather data. But you can only explain in the best case 30% of your variability. That means 70% is unaccounted, even though you had some, what did you say, 40 parameters?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, is this hypothesis, is it carved in stone? Or
yeah, you're right. I'm not trying to explain all the variability for the quality. I'm just trying to explain, I guess I didn't really make that too clear, but I'm just trying to explain all of the weather effects. So, yeah, I will only be able to explain part of the variation in the end.